listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Strikes at Moscow 2018. Yaya Toure predicts there could be fallout from Russia's racial abuse of black players, and the Manchester City midfielder predicts that black players could boycott the Russian World Cup. It's El Clasico weekend. There are some cracking fixtures around Europe this weekend, and we take a look at some of the best, including El Clasico and the Riviera Derby. And it's the final week of the season in Major League Soccer. The Supporters' Shield and playoff places still up for grabs. We chat with Carl McCarthy about all things Major League Soccer on today's show. Welcome to Friday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. Excuse me, but it is a big weekend. I'm always getting choked up thinking about it. We've got some cracking fixtures on the way this weekend. Major League Soccer taking the main bulk of our show today, of course, as we look at the final weekend of the season. We get, of course, into the playoffs. But there's a pretty big game coming up this weekend. It is called, of course, El Clasico. Real Madrid take on Barcelona. We'll be talking about that as well later on in the show. Who do you think will win? Madrid nor Barca have looked as fearful in the eyes of many this season as they have done in previous years. And I really do think that this could be an open El Clasico. The winner is definitely going to be difficult to predict. And is it better without Jose and Pep giving us the off-pitch build-up? Can we focus now more on what's happening on the pitch? I just don't know. Maybe it takes away a little bit of that edge that we like to see in the build-up to the El Clasicos over the last few years. In the Bundesliga, as I said, Schalke taking on Borussia Dortmund, the Riviera Derby on Saturday. Both clubs coming into it with a fair few injuries. Huntelaar and Hoger still out for Schalke, while Dortmund will still be without Piszczek and Gündoğan. We saw that in the Champions League this week. Schalke supporters are looking for the third win in a row over their rivals, while Dortmund, who go into this game as the favourites, will be looking to continue that solid run of form after the win against Arsenal in midweek. Most people predicting a 2-2 draw when it comes to that. The main story, though, main talking point really for today, is a very intriguing story that comes out after UEFA said they will investigate the racial abuse that Yaya Toure said that he faced from the CSKA Moscow fans. Yaya Toure has spoken out today, saying that there could easily be a boycott of the Russian World Cup by black players unless FIFA and UEFA kind of start tackling this problem. Of course, many people have already had their say about this already in the papers today. Martin Samuel was talking about how it's crazy that the Moscow has been given the 2008 Champions League final. Of course, it's got the 2018 World Cup as well. Yet there are areas of the world around there that continue to see fans racially abusing players from the stands. And UEFA and FIFA obviously aren't doing enough. Yaya Toure said, We're not there yet in terms of a boycott. Let's leave FIFA and UEFA to do their work. UEFA has decided to do certain things. They have decided to apply the rules. That's all we want. A lot of things have been said about racism. If today an organisation and supporters stray from the straight path or slip up, the goal is to set them straight again. We all are humans. It's not a nice feeling to go and play a football match to bring joy to the people and to be called a monkey or to hear monkey noises. I don't look like a monkey. That's what disappoints me so much. If I was a black player... Oh, excuse me, Jose Mourinho has had his say as well in the build-up to the weekend's game, saying if I was a black player, I would say the other billions are much more important, so let's fight the thousands. But let's give to the billions what the billions want, he said. And the billions want the best football, and the best football without black players is not the best football. Plenty of managers having their say on this. Yaya Toure has hinted, though, that it's a possibility that there could be a boycott, but he wants to see what UEFA and FIFA are going to do. UEFA have opened up a CSKA Moscow a racist chants case, as I say. So expect a continuation of this story for a long, long time. It's just unbelievable. But at least, as we were talking about yesterday, you know, UEFA saying that they were going to investigate the Ajax fans, now saying they are going to investigate the CSKA Moscow problems from Wednesday night. Manchester City getting the result in Moscow, but under very difficult and horrible circumstances to play football. Not just because of the painted pitch, but the abuse that many players took from the fans. Before we get into a little bit of Major League Soccer talk with Mr. Carl McCarthy, we've got a pretty packed show, of course, and I know Rafa is on a bit of a deadline as well today. So what I'm going to do before we run out of time is run through the fixtures that are coming up this weekend. On Friday night in Spanish Premier Division, Rayo Vallecano take on Real Valladolid. In the Bundesliga, Stuttgart take on Nürnberg, and there's even a bit of French football as well, as Nantes take on Lille. Coming up tomorrow in the Barclays Premier League. Actually, we'll go through the Premier League when we do IKTS. Let's leave the Premier League aside for now. But in Spain, Malaga against Celta Vigo, of course, Barcelona take on Real Madrid, Elche take on Granada, and Levante take on Espanyol. In the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich take on Hertha Berlin. Should be an interesting tie indeed. Bayern looking fantastic in midweek, as always. Hannover take on Hoffenheim, Leverkusen take on Augsburg, Mainz take on Braunschweig, Schalke take on Borussia Dortmund, Wolfsburg take on Werder Bremen. In Italy, Sampdoria meet Atalanta, while Inter Milan in the evening take on Verona. I'll tell you what, Verona having an absolutely stellar start to their season this season. When you look at the Serie A table and you see that Hellas up there in fourth place, absolutely incredible for the newly promoted side to be there at this point. In French Ligue 1, Marseille take on Rennes, Bastia take on Nantes, take on Nice, Guingamp take on Ajaccio, Lorient take on Sochaux, Toulouse take on Rennes, and Valenciennes take on Evian. And as we move into Sunday's fixtures in Spain, we see Sevilla take on Osasuna, Villarreal take on Valencia, Real Sociedad take on Almeria, Atletico Madrid meet Real Betis on Sunday night as well. That's going to be a cracking way to finish off the Spanish weekend. Freiburg take on Hamburg, and Gladbach take on Eintracht Frankfurt on Sunday in Germany. And in Serie A, a packed Sunday, starting with Napoli against Torino, Bologna take on Livorno, Catania take on Sassuolo, Chievo take on Fiorentina, Juventus meet Genoa, Parma take on AC Milan, Udinese meet Roma, and then Lazio Cagliari is the evening game in Serie A. And on Sunday in France, Bordeaux take on Montpellier, Monaco take on Lyon, should be an entertaining tie, as will Saint-Etienne taking on PSG. Can anybody stop Paris Saint-Germain? Should be very interesting indeed. But there's plenty of fixtures to talk about in the USA this weekend, and I'm delighted to say that our guest for today is ready and waiting to join us on the show to talk about all things Major League Soccer. It's the final weekend of the season. There are playoff places to be decided, and of course, there's the Supporters' Shield to work out where that's going this weekend as well. And a man joining us to talk all things Major League Soccer is one of our very good friends, and one of the men who, although he is based in Massachusetts, is able to talk all over the US in terms of his soccer knowledge. That's right. I'm delighted to say that joining us here on World Football Daily today is Mr. Kyle McCarthy to talk all things MLS final weekend. Kyle, how are you doing today, mate? It's a pleasure to have you back on board. It's been a while, actually.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's an interesting weekend ahead, and I'm looking forward to it.
It is a big weekend coming up. Of course, the end of the regular season in Major League Soccer. Before we get on to it, I know we'll be talking about this later on, of course, but the eternal debate of playoffs or regular season football, where do you sit on this on this topic?
I think playoffs are a necessary evil in the United States. I think it's ingrained in the culture, and I think it adds some spark to things when you look at the table coming into the end of the regular season. But there's a lot of injury, and I think that's based on the fact that teams are jostling for playoff spots. So I think there are a lot of positives to the current structure.
Do you sympathize, though, with those traditionalists who do get frustrated by it? I mean, you look at, obviously, the Galaxy is a great point to highlight from last year. You know, a side like San Jose, who did so well during the regular season, they almost get punished. And the supporter shield is something that some people think is important. Others really see as kind of the forgotten trophy in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing for clubs to process because you want to be successful during the duration of the campaign. But the rewards are really for being good when it counts toward the end of the season. So I think in MLS, with the length of the season, you really need to focus on peaking towards the end. And I think the teams that are able to do that are the ones that are successful in the postseason. I realize it's difficult to sort of jostle those priorities, but you have to weigh them and proceed according to how you feel most comfortable. And for most teams, that's putting an emphasis on succeeding in the playoffs.
Now, there's obviously an importance on taking that winning feeling into the playoffs, and the New York Red Bulls, with 3 points this weekend, will be able to take that into the playoffs, and of course will take the supporters' shield as well. Do you see a collapse on the cards at all? I mean, the Chicago Fire are going to be going for this because they need to book their place in the playoffs too this weekend.
Well, it's New York searching for a title, so there's always a little room for collapse or failure or whatever you want to say. New York's really had a difficult time over the years at this sort of stage, but I think the Red Bulls have what it takes to collect the maximum points and lift the supporter shield. I think it would be an important accomplishment for the club, and I think it would be good for this Red Bull side to go into the playoffs with the top seed.
How important is it for the club off the pitch as well as on the pitch, especially with the announcement this year, of course, of New York City FC coming to the league?
Certainly adds a little impetus, doesn't it? I mean, when you look at the Red Bulls and what they've done over the years, there have been a lot of opportunities squandered, a lot of chances to really grab a hold of things, and they've let it slip. So with the advent of New York City FC, there isn't as much leeway anymore. You have to take care of your business, and you have to remind people that you were there first and you're New York's team. So if you're going to do that, you've got to find a way to be successful on the field. And I think the Red Bulls have done that this year.
Considering that New York do have a habit of stumbling their way through, how impressed are you at this turnaround of their final season form? Because it does take a lot to keep a head straight and to get your heads in gear come the end of the season after a long, hard year.
Yeah, I think a lot of credit goes to Mike Petke for what he's been able to do this year. He's a rookie coach. He doesn't have a lot of experience, but he's managed to keep this group of disparate personalities chugging in the same direction. There was a little bit of a wobble during the summer, but they've come through it, and they're a side that's sort of hitting their stride at the right time. And that's important because when you look at the squad available to Petke, I mean, that's a team capable of lifting MLS Cup with Tim Cahill in the sort of form that he's in, with Thierry Henry floating around, and you've got a lot of unsung performers in that group too. So I think there's a good mix there. It's just a matter of keeping it going over the next month or so.
It's, of course, there's plenty on the line elsewhere. Carl, you're going actually off to Columbus to watch the New England Revolution, a side that really have disappointed the Revolution throughout the last few years. Has it been a revolution in New England, or is this evolution of a long-term plan that New England have had to finally get into the playoffs? Still not confirmed, though, obviously.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be at Crew Stadium on Sunday, and if the Revs are able to get into the playoffs, I think it's the culmination of a two-year plan, really. When Jay Heaps came in at the start of last season, I think when you look at the 2012 campaign, it was about building a foundation for the future, and they've really added another layer of infrastructure this season. You've got Jose Gonsalves, a defender of the year candidate who's come in and been fantastic at the back for the Revs, and that's improved the side. I think you've got Diego Fagundes emerging as a key player for the Revs and a potential star for this league at the age of 18. And you've had Juan Agudelo, who has been an important factor in what the Revs have done since he's arrived at from Chivas USA. So there are a lot of factors that go into it, but for the Revs, it's all about getting the victory at Cruz Stadium and securing a first playoff berth since 2009.
Are you almost surprised that the Crew, who were given so much credit for their mid-season turnaround, especially after everything the club went through last year, are you surprised that the Crew, who were tipped by many to come out flying this year, haven't been able to impress in the way that we expected them to do?
Yeah, well, they've had some injury concerns. I think Eddie Gavin going out early in the year makes a big difference to them. I think Federico Higuain being in and out of the lineup has created some concerns. But it's been a season of transition in Columbus with Robert Borzija exiting and new ownership coming in and Brian Bliss taking over on the bench. And they've been very good over the past couple of months. Bliss has really got that team playing pretty well. So I don't think it's going to be a walkover for the Revolution by any stretch. I mean, if you had a chance to watch the game last weekend, the Crew and the Reds served up a thriller at Select Stadium. I don't think this game will be quite as open because the Crew aren't in the playoffs, but I think Columbus is a team that must be dealt with in order for the Reds to qualify for the postseason.
Keeping it in the Eastern Conference as well, obviously there's a big pack of teams still looking to secure a playoff spot: Montreal, Chicago, New England, Houston, and of course the Philadelphia Union. Montreal up in third at the moment. Obviously, league's top scorer Marco Di Vaio there. Is this arguably a one-man side for Montreal? If Di Vaio goes in a slump during the playoffs, if they get there, are they looking kind of history for an MLS Cup?
I think Montreal is a deeper side than just a one-man outfit, but you cannot dispel the influence that Di Vaio has had on that team. He has been a fantastic coacher in the final third. He really provides the sharpness for that side, and he makes all the difference. But in order to succeed in the playoffs, Montreal is going to have to get more contributions. I've liked what Hernan Bernardello has given over the past couple of weeks. I think he could be a key piece. I think you need more from Felipe. I think you need more from Justin Mapp. And you've got to find a way to muddle through defensively with Alessandro Nesta Hoppel. That being said, if you can't get an away win at Toronto FC on the final day of the season to secure your postseason berth, then you don't probably deserve to be in the playoffs anyway.
Who are going to be the remaining three that take those three playoff spots then, Kyle? You've said you believe New England can get a result against Columbus, and you think the Impact will. Is it going to be the Fire missing out and the Union or the Dynamo going through?
I think the Dynamo probably hold the edge going into the weekend, even though they started in sixth place because they've got that fixture at DC United. And again, if you don't beat DC United away on the final day of the season, then you really don't deserve to make the postseason. While Chicago's got that really difficult match at New York, for me, I think Houston is probably the side that gets through, but they've got to win and they've got to have little help because they're at a disadvantage on the tiebreakers.
DC United, of course, a shadow of what they were last year. How do you explain the collapse? I mean, when there was the takeover talk and the new stadium getting set to be built, there's so much positivity around the club at the early part of the season, and it's been a nightmare for them in Washington.
Yeah, it's weird. It happens in MLS sometimes when you've got teams who are good one year and just completely crater the next. I think there are a lot of circumstances that go into it. I think for United, part of the problem is poor reinforcement from the foreign markets. You haven't had a lot of good signing from abroad over the past couple of years, and eventually that takes its toll. You've had a lot of players that are not performing up to their normal standards, and that makes a difference as well. And sometimes it's just dumb luck. I mean, when you look at United this year, they've had some decent stretches. They've had some decent games. But the consistency hasn't been there, and the defensive solidity hasn't been there. So when you kind of put it all together, you've got really a nightmare of a season at RFK Stadium.
Out of DC, Toronto, and Chivas, all three sides that have been way off the pace of everybody else in the league, who do you think has, I guess, the most potential to turn things around for next year. I know we're talking very early here, Kyle, but from what you've seen, Toronto have made a few leaps this season, but not enough. And Chivas, as always, almost finishing the season reasonably well, playing decent football, but it's always the rest of the season outside of those final six games that hinders them.
Yeah, I think DC United is going to be better next year. But for me, the question is, what does Toronto FC do during the close season to really improve its squad? I think the looming specter of a designated player or two coming in next year could make all the difference for them. But if you don't get that high-quality player or two until after the World Cup, then where are the Reds going to be for the first half of the season? So, I mean, if I have to pick of those three teams, I'd probably go with United at the moment.
In terms of DP players at Toronto, there was obviously strong mention that Clint Dempsey could have gone there, and Toronto almost let Seattle take him because they knew it would be better for the league to have Clint in Seattle. What did you make of that? I mean, does that kind of highlight a lack of ambition from Toronto to not have said, hey, look, we're going to fight to bring Dempsey to Toronto. This is what we want, rather than what US soccer and the US men's national team would like. This is what we want to get us out of a big hole and to rebuild this franchise.
Well, it sounds like the sort of rationale that you come up with after something goes down to sort of explain it away. For me, I don't think Dempsey was ever going to play in Canada. I don't think the league would have shoved out the money that it did to bring him home, to have him play in Canada. I think those are just the realities of the situation. And Seattle was willing to step up and pay the money required to bring him back. And I think that's the long and short of it. I don't really hold that against Toronto FC or any other club that might have been interested in Dempsey and just simply decided that it wasn't a prudent financial move.
Kyle, before we go, we do have to touch on obviously the other conference, the Western Conference. I know you don't tend to head west too often, but it does happen on occasion. RSL, Portland, the Galaxy, Seattle all booked their place. San Jose and Colorado both fighting for that final position. Does San Jose, it's a tough ask, but does San Jose almost deserve it with the fight back that they've had over the last few weeks?
Well, I think deserve is perhaps a stretch given how poor they were at the start of the season. I think they've done very, very well in the second half, but you really have to have at least some measure of consistency over the course of the year, and they haven't been able to produce it. Going into this weekend, I can't see them making the playoffs. The gap is just too great on the goal scored tiebreaker. It just simply isn't feasible, but they can at least take some solace in securing a quarterfinal berth in the CONCACAF Champions League earlier this week. I think that'll have to suffice for this campaign.
The Timbers, of course, had a poor season last year and have completely flip-reversed it, as a famous pop band would say. The Portland Timbers then can take the Western Conference and book that number one seed place. How important is that then for almost completing the turnaround from last year?
I think the turnaround is there. But I think the top seed is more important from a home field perspective. I think playing at Chelderman Field in the playoffs is going to be a tough ask for a lot of teams. And for Portland, which is a side that is still sort of trying to find its footing in the upper echelons of MLS, I think the comfort level of having those second legs at home will be important heading into postseason. But you have to applaud the job that Caleb Porter has done this year. The Timbers are much improved, and they're a good side, but there's a lot of work still to do to get through that difficult Western Conference.
And just finally, is this the final chance for Ziggy and the Seattle Sounders? Do you see a parting of the ways, should it not pull off, considering the amount of investment that they've put into this Sounders team?
The question for me is whether a little leniency is warranted given the upheaval during the second half of the season. You have Clint Dempsey coming in, and that acquisition shook the infrastructure of the team. Because when Dempsey comes in and makes all that money, you've got Eddie Johnson, who's starting to gripe about his compensation levels with some merit. You've got Obafemi Martins, who has been in and out of the lineup. And you've got Siggy Schmidt trying to figure out how to fit all the pieces together. And that includes Dempsey, who hasn't really been fit since he's gotten here. So it's been a difficult second half of the campaign for Seattle. I think there's plenty of talent there, and they could pull it together for the playoffs. I don't know. At the moment, it doesn't look particularly likely. I don't think they have the defensive resources at the moment to do that. But when you look at Seattle, I think there's a little patience required, because it's difficult to go out and get a coach that's better than Siggy Schmid right now. But if things continue to go south, I think the questions will be continue to be asked.
Who are the two teams that you think will be competing for the MLS Cup at this stage, Kyle? I know it's a big, bold prediction already before the playoffs have even started, but who do you expect it to be, do you think?
Well, Brian Jensen asked me this question on the Salt Lake radio show not that long ago, and I said Houston and Los Angeles, because they were the only two teams I trusted. And then Houston promptly cratered and needs to win on the final weekend. So at this stage, it's so difficult to tell who's going to get through. If I had to guess, I'm going to stick with the Galaxy at West, because they've been there and they've done it. But in the East, I mean, I can't look past New York right now. I think New York is the best side in the Eastern Conference. Right now, if you had to pin me down, I'd go with New York and LA.
I think everybody would be quite chuffed to see a Galaxy Red Bulls final. I mean, if only Beckham were there and Major League Soccer could have their ultimate final that they want to, Beckham against Henry. But unfortunately, that would not be the case either way. But Carl, we appreciate you stopping by today on World Football Daily. I know you've got a flight to catch, so we will let you get off, get your phone off and onto that plane. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you when the playoffs get underway, my man.
Absolutely. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Carl McCarthy there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Major League Soccer, the final weekend of the season about to get underway. And you can follow all the ongoings from that weekend on Carl's Twitter account at Kyle J. McCarthy. All one word, all lowercase. That's at Kyle J. McCarthy. You can find Carl's work, obviously, on Fox Soccer, any soccer journal, New England Soccer Journal. He's the Revs beat writer for the Boston Herald and MajorLeagueSoccer.com as well. Big thanks to Carl there for joining us here on WFD. And of course, there's plenty of storylines coming out from this season. I mean, what would have happened, say, if Mike McGee hadn't made that switch? 20 goals finishing up the season. 20 goals this year. Since that move to Chicago, he's been on fire for the majority of the season. Started flyingly. Would the Galaxy be in a stronger position if they hadn't brought in Robbie Rogers as well? The impact on the Galaxy that trade had was absolutely massive. Marco Di Vaio, is he leading a one-man side? Let us know. Show up worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483, and the Facebook page as well. And of course, New England's fantastic turnaround for Gundes, but also with 13 goals this year, but also you do, as Kyle said, have to look at the part that Juan Agudelo played for the New England Revolution. Just a phenomenal player in Major League Soccer. And it's been a very big season for them. I remember last year chatting with Kyle at the end of the year and kind of saying, oh my goodness, you know, how poor is that? How bad has this been for the Revs? And when's the turnaround going to come? Well, it has seemed to have turned around this year, as has the Philadelphia Union as well, still in with the chance for the playoff spots. And, you know, we were chatting with Mike LaHood last year around about this time as well. He was talking to us about how it was a tough year, you know, it's horrible to miss out on the playoffs, etc. And now, you know, Mike and the Philadelphia Union with the chance to get themselves into the playoffs this weekend. The games for this weekend in Major League Soccer are as follows. The Union take on SKC. Toronto take on Montreal. San Jose take on Dallas. Chivas take on the Portland Timbers in the big games on Saturday and Sunday. It's DC United taking on Houston. Columbus take on New England. New York take on the Chicago Fire. The Whitecaps meet the Rapids. And we finish up with the Sounders against the Galaxy. A prelude, possibly, to a big playoff game. We will catch up with all the Major League Soccer action when we come back from the weekend. But once again, a big thanks to Carl there. Joining me, as always, Rafa, man. Are you excited about the end of the Major League Soccer season, mate?
Well, you know what, man? I will say this, that it has come down very much to the wire. I'm not sure how much of that, you know, it's kind of like baseball, you know, like how much of those standings of the regular season, you know, are just made up, you know? And when I say made up, I say just
you don't mean fictitious, through. You mean like what's the
right,
point?
Right. Just played through, almost like a walkthrough, or like warm-ups or something like that. Kind of like the NBA basketball season. You know, the Lakers, it's all about just getting to the playoffs, because once the Lakers get to the playoffs, they're generally going to shut you down. Or have a really good opportunity of making the finals and getting another ring. Not so much this year, not so much last year.
I was going to say, I think you're going to have to get used to that probably not happening so much.
No. Potentially next season when LeBron decides to come and apply his
In this magical dream world. Yeah, I love this. I love this one. You know, LeBron going to LA Lakers will end up being like Dwight Howard, you know. So some reason, I mean, obviously Howard was already on a slide before he went to LA, but there will be LeBron, you know, arguably going to be the greatest player ever, will turn into Mr. Whacktastic, as they say, mate. As he gets to Los Angeles, it's just going to be a downhill.
It'll be fine. No. Look, Los Angeles has always needed, you know, a figurehead to go with every kind of time era that we live through. Obviously, you know, you've had your Magics, the Worthy era. You know, obviously, right now we have Kobe Bryant locking it down, man. I mean, there's always been a face to the Laker. To the Laker tradition, your Kareems, you know, things like that, man. Like, I'm just saying. So my point being is that I feel like Major League Soccer has kind of, you know, gotten into that same feel where some of the season kind of matches, it's you know, they shrug off pretty easily. It's one of the things I appreciate about you know, the English Premier League and leagues really around Europe is that every point counts. So you can't just go into a game really against a Wigan, you know, if you're Manchester United and, you know, not take it seriously. Every game has to count if you're really trying to win that title, that trophy. And sometimes I don't feel that so much during the real season of Major League Soccer. The Supporters' Shield, you know, it just doesn't mean that much to me. I get that it's kind of like an honor, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win the whole thing.
In that case, I mean, do you... it's probably a debate that we've had many a time on World Football Daily, and I'm sure we had it kind of this time last year, but are you really for or against playoff systems then in Major League Soccer? Because it does kind of make... like, you know, the last... we've been talking about Major League Soccer since March, and it makes those 34 games kind of redundant. In terms of, we saw it last year with the Galaxy. It doesn't matter where you finish, as long as you get into those top five spots. And when you've got almost, well, over half the league going into the playoffs, I mean, that as well kind of seems slightly peculiar to me. You know, you're suddenly giving half of the teams in the whole of Major League Soccer a chance.
Just be about average, yeah. What you're saying is, like, just be about average of a team, and we'll get you to the playoffs. And then kick it up a notch and get excited. You know what I mean?
Don't get me wrong, that's great for getting excitement around Major League Soccer in terms of, you know, playoffs. And I know America has this long kind of history of, you know, win or go home, you know, as they say in basketball, like win or go fishing kind of thing. And that obviously builds up a great amount of hype. And I always enjoy watching the playoffs of basketball, ice hockey and stuff.
You know,
but
I'm sorry,
football needs that?
Can I just interject real quick, Juice, real quick. With what you said there about win or go home and you know, being kind of like a U.S. sentiment, I would tend to agree with you. You know, there's many a time where, you know, you look at like a certain playoff or tournament structure kind of brackets, and it's winner go home. Now, my problem is that, well, isn't that the same thing with like a relegation, you know, promotion kind of thing, like a winner go home?
It comes down to 38 games rather than one game. You know, that's the beauty about football in Europe is that, you know, when it does come down to the last day of the season, the last kick of the season, like Manchester City winning the title, it makes it even more incredible, I think, than a playoff final win, because you've had 38 games to separate two sides and there's nothing to pick them apart until the final day of the season. That makes it more intense to me than when you take two teams that in the league might be 8-9 points clear of each other, and then suddenly you put them into a game, you know, 3-game series, 5-game series, whatever it is, but you put them into a point where it's only like, okay, no, but we're going to say you're on level par, winner takes all type of thing. I think it is, you can talk about, oh yeah, you know, you get down to win or go home at the end of the season when it terms of relegation battles, but, you know, if you mess up in those 36, 35 games before those final three, for instance, then it doesn't matter. There's no such thing as win or go home in that sense. You're fighting for the whole season for your relegation. It's not just coming down to those final three games because you've maybe finish mid-table, but suddenly you're thrown into the relegation mix for three kind of games outside of a normal season. I think it does have more meaning when it comes down to that, when you've been playing and playing and playing all year long for it, rather than just taking two teams from two different ends of the spectrum.
Well, I guess my argument, Juice, was that you would think that more Americans would appreciate the intensity and the meaning behind promotion and relegation, and understand that it is almost like a win or go home mentality, in the sense that, look, you need to now compete every day. Like, every game, every point matters.
Every day.
You know what I mean? And what actually, one of the things that I kind of really like about, European leagues is at the end of the season, when you look at champions or you look at any given team, right? And you go back through every game and look at the goals scored, the chances missed, the calls that could have gone the other way and potentially gotten you a penalty, and that could have gotten you a goal, which could have gotten you a point, which could have got you all that stuff really gets me excited, and it's part of the story of every season. It's what's more enriching, I think, about the promotion relegation kind of table for me. I trust me, I appreciate an American playoff game. I hate to say it, Juice. I actually sat down and watched some of the World Series last night, and I absolutely hate the Red Sox and the Cardinals. And I'm sure we're probably going to lose a couple of subscribers from me saying that. But the fact of the matter is that I've been born and raised in Southern California. I grew up liking the Dodgers. Okay, and the reason was because the rest of my family liked the Angels, and I didn't want to be an Angels. The Angels sounded like a girls' team when I was growing up. So I like the Dodgers. Then the Sandlot came out, Juice, and I got into the Dodgers some more because, well, Benny the Jet was wearing a Dodgers cap all the time. So that's kind of like my little story of who I support and where I watch things or whatever. But the whole fact of the matter is that I think that you really – I don't like it when pundits, correspondents, or people online or whatever, MLS.com, whoever's saying it, when they constantly shoot down the idea of like, oh, well, the owners will never, accept relegation and promotion. And I get that. I understand that they're losing money. But I almost also think that there's enough kind of cowboys out there. And really, there's enough Americans out there who already own Premier League teams. Obviously, they own kind of stable Premier League teams for the most part. But the whole fact of the matter is that I think that there are owners out there in the States, and I think that it could really, really ramp things up in terms of football coverage and set ourselves apart in this country, really. You know what I mean? Like, it's a completely different style of play, setup, table, and I really, really dig that, Juice.
I understand where people come from with loving the playoffs and all that sort of stuff. But for me, traditionalists, it's all about the regular season. That's why if whoever pulls it off this weekend, I will have to say, kind of tip the cap. And, I always wear a cap, ref, so, I will be tipping it. excuse me. And we'll be kind of hoping that they end up being the Major League Soccer champs, man. I mean, that's why I was a big fan of San Jose last year, Supporters Shield, and then boom. I'd love to have seen them go to the MLS Cup final. We are, though, getting into the playoff month, and it's going to be very interesting indeed when we get to those knockout stages. I was actually having a chat with somebody on Twitter about the whole Major League Soccer playoff kind of thing, and they kind of agreed with me that they prefer the traditional football way as opposed to the playoff way. But I don't think we'll ever see it change in Major League Soccer just yet. I really don't. I think because. And that's the other thing for the owners. I mean, we were talking about the owners not wanting promotion and relegation. Having playoffs like this where half the league can make the playoffs, have big playoff games live on national television with big crowds drawn in of that any game, any time, something can happen to upset the odds type style. I think that also is a big draw for owners because they kind of say, well, look, we can have a really bad long run in the season, but if we get something at the end and sneak our way into the playoffs, then you know what? That's all right with us. We're gonna be there at the end of the season and able to win this.
Can I throw a different question at you and completely shift gear? Well, not completely.
Throw away. Throw away.
We are. Here's my curveball, except it's more in the shape of a American football It's been decided, sir. I know that you follow the NFL a little bit. It's been decided that there's going to be another game added to the 2014 season. I think three games in total played in London.
Yeah, no, that's three year. Games. The Falcons, the Jaguars, and the Oakland Raiders come into Wembley.
The Raiders.
I am going to get me a ticket for that because it's going to be too funny watching English trip people try and act like they're in the black hole, which is going to be weird because especially as they'll all be like scattered around Wembley Arena kind of things, Wembley Stadium. Yeah. So, yeah. Although I am going this weekend, my man. I'm spending my Sunday going to the San Francisco 49ers. Can't wait to see that. Especially it's going to be really
awkward. Fans will be happy about that.
It's going to be awkward because Jaguars are meant to be the home side for the game. And the Niners have got such a big following here in the UK. There's not going to be anybody supporting the Jags. It's going to be all Niners fans, I tell you, in Wembley. It's going to be a really biased crowd against the home side. Sorry, Raf, I interrupted you.
Well, I guess a couple questions. What has been the feel from the British public or the British sporting public about the NFL coming? Like, how do they appreciate it?
Man, it sells out so quickly.
Kind of following?
It sells out so quickly. There's a huge following. There's plenty of people like myself, like like my old man, like 90% of the people on my old American football teams and American football teams across the country that make sure we kind of go to these games, at least one of them every single year kind of thing. And there's a massive following, man. There's people that go every year. There's people that go kind of once or twice over the last few years. And there's people that are getting into the sport from it being over here as well.
Now, follow-up question, and I think I have another one after this as well. And I'm sorry, guys, we're talking a little bit of American football, but just get cultured a little bit, okay? My second question is what is the atmosphere like? I know you've been to one of these before. What is the atmosphere like? Because here's why I say, the kind of interviews that we hear from the players and stuff and the radio show appearances and things like that, they act like it's kind of, well, man, it's way different. It's like, you don't know who they're cheering for because they're just cheering all the time. And I don't think they necessarily know what they're cheering about because there's just constant cheering. So is it loud? Is it kind of ruckus? Is it, do people know what they're cheering about?
People know what they're cheering about, but unfortunately it's because there's, and we discussed this about when soccer goes to the US, you know, there are so many fans of different teams. You know, I'm an Eagles fan. I'll support a team on the kind of the day type thing, but sure. I'm an Eagles fan. So if the Eagles came, I'd be there kind of screaming quite a bit, like, yes, go, baby, Mike Vick, woo! Being that guy who no one wants to sit next to.
I could just see Juice pulling out like a Rocky, like Philadelphia Eagles accent going on or something like that. All right, Rocky, come on.
I'm not that good. Don't worry about that. but because there are so many fans and people are there just to see an American football game rather than to see a specific team, there are of course fans from both sides there, but in general most of the fans that go there want to just see a great game of American football, so they'll support the offense if they pull off something like huge and everyone will go, oh yeah, kind of thing. But at the same, and there won't be any booing, there won't be any jeering, there'll be noise, but it will be half as loud as a home stadium in the NFL, you know, because there's about half the people probably there a bit like, yeah, let's go. Especially it gets like this weekend, I think, is going to be the first time there's going to be a really loud crowd, but it is going to be against the home side, which is going to be a bit awkward. I mean, I remember Dolphins were the home side, but because the Giants had just come off the back of winning, it was the season they actually won the Super Bowl, wasn't it? But anyway, the first one, there were plenty more Giants fans there than Dolphin fans, so there was like a lot of people that were kind of like, yeah, let's go New York, baby, woo! And it didn't quite match up, and it never really has done. You know, you get Pats Buccaneers, you know, Buccaneers home game, but the Pats had a louder following because because they're the New England Patriots, they're popular over here. So it doesn't really work to me, the whole fact.
That's funny.
Because I much prefer
the
going
Patriots
to the
would be so well followed by the English.
It's because people just love Tom Brady, which is just really annoying because he's Mr. Perfect. Yeah. Anyway,
you would think the Patriots would just be someone to despise as a great British, but hey, you know.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Well, I do that personally. I make sure I make sure I despise.
That's good because I absolutely hate the New England Patriots as well. Okay, and my last question, that's fine. You've satisfied my second question. My last question is you know, there's for some reason a lot of the radio show hosts and a lot of the, you know, TV pundits and stuff that I hear. I don't watch a lot of American football stuff, but I do listen to sports radio on the way to work and stuff. Anyways, what they say, Juice, is that, they're sending games over there. They're sending more games over there because they're trying to get a team in London. Now, I don't necessarily think that that's what they're trying to do. What I seriously think that the NFL is trying to do is obviously just tap into the UK European market as much as they possibly can. To be a game every week in London, and some team is going to be, you know, a home and away team kind of a thing, but practically every team in the NFL will I think it will probably break down to almost every team will have to play there. But the whole point is, yeah, you know, one game a week will be held in the UK as like an exhibition game or an away home game for somebody else, you know what I mean, until that gets stable enough to where they start taking, you know, one of those weekends and going to like Barcelona, Mexico City. Guarantee you that's what, like,
Mexico City might happen, but the London's much better for, they'll keep it in London. They won't move it away from there because A, it's a big hub, international hub for airport wise, Heathrow, etc. B, it's really close to the US in terms of European countries. It's like one of the closest to get to and easiest to get to. So it means that people from all over Europe can come, and it's easier for the teams to go to London as well. It won't go elsewhere. And C, because it's a magnificent ground that's been built with so much corporate hospitality. That's a huge thing for when these people, you look at the grounds that get chosen for Champions League finals and stuff. Recently updated with corporate hospitality.
I could easily see them going an extra hour to France, to Paris, and then, you know what, you throw an extra hour on top of that maybe to go to Germany, where arguably the better stadiums are.
Yeah, but you're looking like 8-9 hour flights now here if you go to Germany.
And if they go early, I mean, you don't think that they can work the scheduling out to kind of send them a little earlier on the week. It takes a day or two to kind of adjust.
Well, they come straight over on the Sunday, but it just wouldn't happen. I don't think they'd be willing to do it. And there aren't really better stadiums, Raf. When you think Wembley's, what, 100,000? 90 to 100,000? And more update than any of the others. It's update than any of the other stadiums. It is, without a doubt, the best stadium for hosting American football in terms of size and corporate hospitality. I can't see them going elsewhere, man. Not at all.
I'm sorry I got us really distracted on this, Juice. I feel like I've almost wasted, you know, the majority of our Friday podcast on the NFL.
Well, no worries, man. Let's get back to the soccer ball as opposed to the football. And let's get one of my favorite bits of the show. Of course, IKTS, where, Raf, you continue to kick some serious booty in IKTS. Let's see what you've got this week, man. Of course, Premier League still continues. We have El Clasico as well, which we'll have a little chat about before we leave. So we'll just quickly run through IKTS. Palace against Arsenal without Ian Holloway, of course, has left Palace by mutual consent against Arsenal. High flying, but off that loss against Dortmund.
I think that they are going to kind of use that Dortmund loss as a motivator. Sorry, I just hit my daughter's little stroller here, her baby stroller here. It's going to be a motivator. It's going to be a 3-0 Arsenal win. And I think it, you know, shows some credit to the back line and goalkeeper who haven't let very many goals pass this season.
They have done well. I've got 3-0 Arsenal as well. Villa against Everton. I see goals, goals, goals. Benteke v Lukaku, the Belgium striker. Face off. Everton 3, Villa 2 up at Villa Park.
See, I think that Villa are going to make a homestand, and as much talent is on the pitch, Juice, I have this as a 1-0 Villa victory at home. Just barely, though.
Liverpool against West Bromwich Albion. Liverpool unable to do it against 10 men Newcastle last weekend. The Baggies are in a bit of a flow at the moment, although I'm still not convinced by them. I'm going Liverpool 1-0 up at Anfield.
I got this 3-1 Liverpool, and I think they want to show off at Anfield this weekend.
When we move into Manchester United against Stoke City. United at home, it's not been picture perfect for Moyes against a Stoke side that are struggling this season as well. What are you going for, Raf?
I think they scraped by with the 1-0 victory. I don't think it's too convincing. I think some questions really start getting asked hardcore. And best of luck to Moyes. Yeah, you know, I think this season, we've said it already. it's going to be an incredibly tough season for Moise, and I hope that it makes it through in one piece.
Stoke struggling, man. I'm going with United to win 3-1. Van Persie will be back. Rooney's on fire. And criticism of Kagawa unnecessary from the English papers this week. Norwich against Cardiff. The Canaries at home against Cardiff. I'm going with a 2-0 win Cardiff. Sorry, 2-0 win Norwich. I apologize.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I want to say 1-0 Norwich, but I'm going to say 1-1. Cardiff got to pick up points somewhere.
They do, but it's just off the pitch with Tan. I think it's the owners being absolutely balmy at the moment. There's still that Malky Mackay stuff. Southampton against Fulham. Can Kasami produce once again? Darren Bent as well will be looking for goals. As will Berbatov against a very good Southampton side that got that draw against Manchester United. 2-0 at home for Saints.
I got a 2-1 at home for Saints. So, yeah, I'm still with you. I think they handled Fulham.
I'm so confident. That's my banker, by the way. That's my banker.
I know. I'm thinking about that. It's with the times three multiplier. I'm kind of, lean on that right now.
Sunderland against Newcastle. Geordie Shaw against Tyne Weir. It's the Tyne Weir derby at Sunderland. The Black Cats taking on Newcastle. I am going for a 2-0 Newcastle win. Sunderland's dismal season continues.
I got a 2-1 Newcastle and the Jersey Shore or the Geordie Shore.
That's an actual TV show, by the way. That is a TV show.
I know.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Brilliant. Good times. All right.
The biggest game of the weekend, Chelsea against Manchester City. People expecting goals. I'm going 1-0 City down at Stamford Bridge.
Ooh. See, I think because it's at Stamford Bridge and just because, the mean Mourinho's back, the special one's back. I see this being a just barely 2-1 victory. I'm hoping El Nino's back to form. I wish they'd started.
He looked it in midweek. I tell you, people saying that Torres has returned after that Champions League midweek performance from him. 2 goals, of course. I'm just not convinced by this Chelsea attack, even though City's back line is poor as well. We were talking about that with Will Tidy yesterday on the show. Swansea against West Ham United. Swansea continuing their good form. I've got to go with Swansea winning 2-1.
Yeah, see, I mean, I'm leaning more on Swansea as well, but I mean, I was very impressed. I forget who you said that, or maybe it was Schipanic who said that. West Ham have been really able to tactically maneuver through some really tough fixtures already. I'm gonna say 2-1 Swansea.
2-1 Swansea. Fair enough. I've gone with the 2-1 as well. Tottenham against Hull, the final game of the weekend. 3-0 Spurs. 3-0 Spurs. Easy days.
Yeah, 3-0. Should get it, no problem. Could get it in the first half.
That is, those are the games coming up in the Premier League this weekend. We ran through the European fixtures earlier on in the show. If you want to listen to them again, just hit and repeat the show. It's better to listen to it second time around. It's always easier second time around. Let's put it that way.
Feel free to go back and listen to all my IKTS segments at any time, and take some notes.
Take some notes from Rafferty. He's storming the world. Football Daily. I love how it's like you wanting to give away stuff to winners of IKTS each week, and then suddenly you're storming it every week, and it's like, well, we can't really give it to yourself, can we? Let's talk quickly. We've only got a few minutes left, Raf, but it is El Clasico. We're talking about it a little bit with Ben Hayward. Do you think the spice is gone from the build-up to this game, at least, because we've only got Tata Martino against Carlo Ancelotti, two men who seem to kind of respect their opponents quite a bit and aren't willing to be out in the media, unlike Pep and Jose? Or are you still as buzzing for this one?
I think that this one's an interesting one, mainly because there's a lot in limbo or a lot in flux. For me, I feel like Barcelona have generally been kind of in control of the rivalry for the last couple years, basically. I know that they struggled a little bit when Mourinho came in, but I'm more impressed with what Ancelotti has been able to do with Real Madrid thus far, and I think that the results that they are getting are results that they're not necessarily trying too hard for. So this could be, this could be a very, very interesting game.
The expected lineups are crazy for Madrid. Some people are suggesting that they're going to go with Benzema, Bale, Isco, Ronaldo, Ilra Mendy, and Modric. Now, that's a crazy attacking six there. Absolutely ridiculous. It leaves them very exposed, I think, at the back. Elamendi kind of as the holding midfielder. Of course, Xabi Alonso is not fit, but Kadira should be in there. And the fact that people are suggesting that Bale will start, I think, is ridiculous. And Di Maria, I've been talking about him most of the season for Madrid as one of the outstanding performers. You know, it deserves to be starting in this game. If you can't have a player play that well at the beginning of the season and then not be given the chance to play in the first ultra big game of the year in terms of the El Clasico. So I don't agree with a lot of these predicted lineups coming out. I can see more Elmendi taking a seat on the bench and it being Modric and Kadira as kind of maybe more experienced this sort of big game atmosphere. Bale on the bench as well with Isco, Ronaldo and Di Maria as that front three behind Benzema, who, by the way,
I mean, look at those names that you have coming off the bench, and isn't that something to be said? Like, isn't it wonderful to have like a super sub? Like, when the opposition thinks that they've had enough at 60 minutes and they're like, oh man, this has been tough, you know, but I think we're finally getting them. And then all of a sudden you throw a, you know, not necessarily a curveball, but just another straight hard ball at them, and it's just another, oh, fresh legs of an increase. Yeah.
But both sides can do that as well. I mean, Barca not really limited by injury crisis either at the moment. Only big loss really to me is Jordi Alba, who's going to be out for this one. But, you know, you think, you know, Fabregas, Neymar, Messi, Alexis Sanchez, Pedro, Busquets, Xavi, Iniesta. You know, a majority of those players will find a starting space this weekend, but those that don't will be able to come in off the bench and make a big impact for them. Look, the Clásico, whether or not there's the build-up of the managers talking, is always going to be a big finale, if you will. Unfortunately, it's not a finale to the weekend this weekend, though. And ridiculously, I'm telling you now, I'm so livid by this, Sky Sports aren't allowed to show a kickoff until 5:15 on a Saturday because of the broadcasting rights, etc., etc., yada, yada, yada. Which means, with El Clasico kicking off at 5 o'clock, we miss the first 15 minutes of the El Clasico. We get no build-up, we miss the first 15 minutes. That is... Jeez. Terrible. I am absolutely livid by this. And by the way, if
I'm
you want
to laugh if there's a goal scored.
And if you if there's like a, you know, three goals in the first 15 minutes and then nothing for the rest of the game, there will be hell to pay, I'm telling you. And by the way, if you fancy a good laugh, Karim Benzema showing his skills by him, Bale, Modric kicking rugby balls against a crossbar in a video for a betting website, all decked out in their Real Madrid gear and whatnot. Benzema, obviously, we know how good he is at missing the target and hitting the crossbar, or even putting it over, because we saw him put it over from 3 yards against Juventus earlier in the week. So Karim Benzema, obviously used to not hitting the target, might bode well for Barcelona this weekend. It is El Clasico this weekend. It is the final weekend of the Major League Soccer season before we get into the playoffs. And of course, there's games all around Europe. I can't wait to get it back to World Football Daily on Monday to talk about it all. But for the time being, take care. Have a cracking weekend. And we will see you at the same time next week. We've got to wait a whole more days before I can talk to you again. Have a cracking weekend. We'll see you on the flip side. Have a good one. Yeah, no.